This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, good Friday to you. Thanks for joining us. Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. All right, so for many, many weeks, we have been talking about the AFC, and we've been looking at this conference and saying, where is the dominating team, right? Where is it? We saw Buffalo emerge. We saw the Patriots are coming up a little bit. We kept wondering about Kansas City. Maybe it'd be the Chargers. And what about the Tennessee Titans? We never felt like there was a team that was head and shoulders above everybody else, like we saw with the New England Patriots for a number of years and the Chiefs for a number of years. I don't know if last night's game does exactly that, but man, is it close. That is a 7-game win streak now for Kansas City. That is 2 fourth quarter touchdown drives by Patrick Mahomes, 1 in overtime, that lifted them on a road victory against the Chargers in one of the bigger divisional games for the AFC West than we've had in a long time. And that is really solely on the dominance of the Kansas City Chiefs over the last couple of years. And sort of the fact that Denver and the Raiders and the Chargers have really, you know, struggled over the last couple of years to sort of do anything against the explosion of Patrick Mahomes and Kansas City. That was a good game last night. It wasn't well played at times, but it doesn't matter. I think the back and forth nature of it was a very, very entertaining game. We're going to get to some of the details of it, including the Chargers and Brandon Staley's decision to go for it on fourth down. We love in sports to have our cake and eat it too, don't we? I mean, we love as fans to say, gee, I really wish coaches would be more confident in their offense and go for it on fourth down. And then when they go for it on fourth down, including a number of times going for it on fourth down, and yet come up short, then we go, why do they go for it on fourth down when kicking field goals would be good points for the end of the game? Listen, I love the aggressiveness. I do agree that in a game against the Chiefs, points are important. But as Staley said afterwards, touchdowns are really important, and that's what they were going for. We'll discuss all of it, including getting Ron Culver's thoughts on his Chargers last night and where he thought they went right and where he thought they went wrong in this overtime loss to Kansas City. We'll also talk a little bit more about the other details of the game, including that major injury that occurred early in the contest that had us wondering pretty much all game long about the status of Donald Parham. We'll talk about that as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Thursday night football last night. Kansas City going to 10-4 as they win their seventh straight game. 34-28 victory in overtime. Travis Kelce, 34-yard touchdown. Actually, it was like a 4-yard completion and a 30-yard run. Which, by the way, that had no business being a touchdown. None whatsoever. That was a standard throw it over the middle, hit your tight end, maybe through size, he picks up a few more yards and keeps the drive alive, and that's about it. He spun around a couple of defenders. He got found a real nice opening and jaunted it in for the game-winning touchdown.
Yeah, he channeled his inner Barry Sanders on that play.
These games that are this late in the season, we went into this game last night saying this. L.A. was one game behind Kansas City in the division, but a win would give them 2 victories this year over Kansas City, so they'd own the tiebreaker. So it's kind of essentially a 2-game swing if they should finish tied at the end of the season. But now it is a 2-game lead with 3 to play for Kansas City on a 7-game win streak. That's how quickly that went from the Chargers owning that division to Kansas City comfortably owning that division. 1 overtime game at SoFi Stadium last night. So we're going to pick apart this game a little bit, and I want to get your thoughts, Ron, obviously being a Charger fan, and your thoughts on the aggressive nature. But let's get to Kansas City real quick. As I said at the top of the hour, this has been an AFC that And I mean this without any hyperbole. We have not seen the AFC not completely dominated by at least one team for 20 plus years. When the Patriots started their dynasty, they owned that conference. Even the Broncos, like even the Denver Broncos, who would play really well, always graded themselves in what the Patriots were doing. Always competing with the Patriots. Can we get home field advantage? Can we get the game in Denver? All the time. So the Patriots were kind of the standard bearer, the gold standard, if you will, no matter who was kind of rising up, whether it was the Steelers, again, whether it was the Texans back in the day, whether it was the Denver Broncos when they got Peyton Manning, the New England Patriots were always the gold standard. And then that switched and Kansas City became the gold standard. Now, this season, nobody has risen up to that level, right? Buffalo had it for a little bit. Tennessee may have had it for a little bit. But Kansas City now looks like they're getting it, right? This is seven straight wins. They're now 10-4. This was a hard-fought victory, don't get me wrong, and the Chiefs at time were pretty sloppy. But now the Chiefs are back to that level of, hey, they're dangerous. Look what Patrick Mahomes did. When you're the best player and the team needs you more than anything else to play well, Patrick Mahomes played well. They needed him in the fourth quarter to lead touchdown drives. He had been really kind of back and forth, struggling for most of the game, threw some bad passes, turned the ball over. But when they needed him the most in that fourth quarter, he led two big, long touchdown drives in the fourth and then one in overtime that sealed the win. Now, as for the Chargers, this puts them in the wild card race, but comfortably at 8-6 when everybody else is sort of playing around at 7-6. But the thing is, some of those 7-6 teams are going to win this weekend, and they're going to be in that same 8-6 category. But I still like this team. Now, I want your thoughts, Ron, on the aggressive nature of what the Chargers did on fourth down. Because as I said at the top, we love to go, why doesn't anybody go for it on fourth down? Why do they not do this? Why not go out? It's fourth and short. What? Go after it. Be aggressive. And then when they are aggressive and they fail, then it's, why don't you kick a field goal? Why don't you punt? Why don't you get rid of the ball? Why are you going for it? I like this. I liked it last night. I thought the Chargers had momentum on those plays. I thought they could have converted those plays.
Yeah, I don't think the going for it on fourth, I mean, what, they were 2 for 5?
Yeah, they were 2 for 5.
Which isn't bad. I mean, it's not great, but it's not bad. I mean, you know, maybe down by the goal line, maybe grab some points and, you know, take care of business right then and there. But at the same time, I mean, you know, he realizes that against the Chiefs, I mean, he's giving the Chiefs respect. You know, I don't think he does that against the Giants.
No, I don't think so either.
I think with the Chiefs, he knows that, you know what, if we just keep putting up field goals, Mahomes is just going to march down the field and score touchdowns.
I'm telling you, the ghost of the Houston Texans in that playoff game still lingers in a lot of coaches' minds when it comes to this Chiefs team.
Yeah.
We can't sit on anything. Like, any lead that we have over this team can be evaporated in a quick, like, that's got to be the forefront of the decision. Look, it wasn't field goal or nothing. They were trying to go for touchdowns. And when you're down there, you know, it's like being on a game show and they give you, hey, do you want $500 or do you want behind what's door number two? Right? The 3 points is the $500. Behind door number two is a potential touchdown that could give you a bigger lead that you can get your defense to sort of not feel the pressure to make big stops when they have to.
But
that
also,
was what
I'll
Staley
say this.
Was going for.
I'll say this too. Going for it on fourth down reassures me, like, you know, if I'm the coach, in a way I'm kind of reassuring my defense. Like, I trust you guys.
Yeah, I do. Yep.
I trust that you're going to make a play, that you're going to stop them, that you're going to, you know, be able to slow them down or do whatever. You're going to take care of business. And as a defender, if my coach kept doing that and he realizes that, you know, he's entrusting us to be the game, I'm all for it. I'm hyped up. And now, it just didn't pan out. Over time, you can totally tell that last play, they just ran out of gas. That's all it simply was, because there was no business for that thing to end up being a touchdown.
And they gave up two big 75-plus yard drives in the fourth quarter, right? So you're right. In overtime, they were very gassed.
They were just gassed.
But what I like about Brandon Staley is, and this was pointed out in sort of the analysis after the game, when this guy got the job, this is exactly what he said he was going to do.
Yep.
He was going to be aggressive. So you cannot fault him for this. You cannot say he was taking a gamble and he was being too aggressive. He said he was going to be aggressive. He has a good offense. He has got a very good quarterback. One of the fourth down plays was tipped, right? The player that Herbert was targeting was open. He threw it a little to the side, which you really want to see him kind of throw it over the top a little bit. But that's a tactical sort of way you execute. But the ball just got tipped. But again, I will tell you this. This is that those decisions to go for it, yeah, because they didn't convert, they become fodder for people that want to attack
easy.
Him.
Yeah, it's easy.
But I will tell you this. If he had kicked field goals and lost this game, fodder to attack him again.
Yep.
Like, there's nothing that guy can do that is, like, in those situations.
And if he had completed them all? Everyone would sit here going, oh, my God, the guy's a genius.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Coach of the year.
Exactly. Because, again, and I've said this many times, guys, it is not simply tacking on points at the end of a game to then say, well, if he had kicked two field goals, they would have won. You don't know that because, again, decisions are made within a game based on score and situation. Maybe Kansas City does something differently down a certain number of points, down, you know, being whatever it is that they were going to do. You know, yes, those points certainly would have come in handy and likely would have led them to win. But he was thinking, if I kick a field goal and they get a touchdown, we're down four. That's a 4-point exchange for them.
And he wasn't crazy. I mean, if it was fourth down and he was on his own 10-yard line, he wasn't going to go for it on fourth down.
Exactly.
But if it was fourth and goal, like inside on the 2-yard line, why not go for it?
Why not go for it? If you fail, you're pinning the team back there.
Yeah, and it worked out. Because, I mean, two plays later, we intercepted the ball and, you know, marched it in the end zone on the very next play.
And then Eckler got that 2-yard touchdown run, right.
So, I mean, it does work out, you know. And I like I've seen a lot more NFL teams doing this now where it's, you know, it's that middle ground. Like, oh, we could punt the ball. We could kick a field goal. It's a little bit out of field goal range. You know, we punt the ball. I mean, we're just skying it up straight into the air and hopefully pin him inside the 10. I like the fact that you go for it right there.
I do, too. I absolutely.
You know, because you're on your side of the field. If you turn it over, it's like, well, you know, they got 50 yards to go at least.
I've been screaming for Mike Tomlin to do this for years, years. And sometimes he'll do it, but a lot of times he does not. He's not the most aggressive coach out there.
My biggest takeaway from this game, and this isn't coming from a Charger fan. This isn't coming, you know, if you're a Chiefs fan, you're going to love this too. But if you're an NFL fan, I think we found a great budding rivalry.
I do, too. And that's a great point. And I'm going to say this again. I think last night was one of those games. And we used to see this in the AFC East, right, with the Patriots. Sometimes the Dolphins would have a pretty good team. And maybe sometimes Rex Ryan and the Jets with Mark Sanchez were pretty good. Buffalo would be okay. But they would go and they'd play their guts out. And the Patriots would still find a way to win. And it would be this deflation of, there's nothing we can do. We're not beating this team. That's not this Chargers team. This Chargers team thinks they can beat this Kansas City team every time they play them.
And they have.
They have beaten them and could have beaten them last night for a season sweep. So that sets up this division very nicely.
I mean, what's weird is the last two seasons, neither of these teams have won at home.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
When they play against each other, which that, you know, that doesn't make any sense.
And again, this is different than finding one of those three teams in the East to match up with the Patriots. This is now turning into two legitimately good teams that should stay good for a while with young quarterbacks battling it out for the division. Like I said at the top of the hour, this was probably the most important game in the division this late in the season we've seen in a long time. Right? We really, to be honest with you, think about when Denver dominated the division, then Kansas City took it over. There hasn't really been a feeling of an AFC West showdown in mid-December in quite some time.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and so this was a good game for the league. You're right. In terms of getting a divisional challenge to a team that has gone to back-to-back Super Bowls. So I give it that. I think the Chargers are extremely dangerous. I think they could have won that game last night. This is one of those games where a bounce or two don't go your way, but nothing changes about who you are as a football team. The Chargers are outstanding. The Chiefs are outstanding. These are two very, very good teams. One had to win, happened to be Kansas City this time. Match them up again, and I have no idea.
Yeah, we could get that, too.
And we could get that.
We could get that in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
And, you know, unfortunately, it'll be at Arrowhead. But, I'm saying, unfortunately, you know, we're 2-0 there the last two seasons. So
that's right.
And I can't, one more thing real quick. Can I give it up to L.A.? Los Angeles?
Yeah.
There were actually Charger fans there.
I kept hearing them. Yeah, exactly.
That was fun.
And they had celebrities there, too, last night, which was kind of cool.
Yes. I don't know if L.A. has had a home game with a home team crowd in I don't know how many years now.
Yeah.
Or maybe Kansas City decided not to travel. I don't know what it was, but there were a lot of Charger fans in the house.
Got Adele in the house, that was for sure. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the injury to Donald Parham. Very scary injury last night. The Fox crew doing their best to try to tell you as best they could what was going on. We'll talk about that when we continue. But again, a very good Thursday night game won by the Chiefs last night. 7 in a row as they go to 10-4. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call here on a Friday. And we're going to have our kind of rundown of games coming up in hour number three. Frank Schwab is also going to join us, too. Need gift ideas? The Holiday Gift Guide is something for everyone on your list at prices under $15. Like a pair of Mechanic Wear black-coated winter gloves, a Power Torque two-piece magnetic tool holder bar, a Slime digital tire gauge, and much more. Check out the Holiday Gift Guide for great gift ideas at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store or O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, the game was marred last night by a really, really troubling head injury for Chargers tight end Donald Parham, who went down to the ground, not contact, just hit the turf, and then sort of rolled over. His arms were kind of frozen in a position. They went to go see him. They put him on a stretcher. They took him to the local hospital. And Erin Andrews did her best last night to try to get any details that she could, but she didn't really have anything other than stable condition and taken to an area hospital. That's really all she could do. Now I know I told you guys this a while back, but years and years and years ago, when I was a young broadcaster, I had worked with a number of motor racing entities to become a motor racing announcer. And one of the things that they teach you is when there is a car accident, you know, a crash, you never speculate about the crash, right? We talked about this on the anniversary of Dale Earnhardt's death back in February, where the Fox crew did not want to say anything positive or negative, like that crash doesn't look bad, or, you know, there doesn't seem to be any movement. You try not to speculate on anything because you don't know. You have no idea. That's just not the way it is. So you just report what you see. And I think this was a very difficult thing for Buck and Aikman to do because I don't think they kind of knew what was happening, and they wanted to say things, but I think they kind of held up. You know, I mean, Joe Buck mentions, like, they saw his hand shaking, and then Joe Buck mentioned that it was cold. Like, well, maybe it has nothing to do with the cold. Maybe it has something to do with the injury. You kind of have to stay off of that. And I know people were kind of on Twitter last night were like, why would he say it was cold? Because you just got to be careful. That's basically it. But it was one of those where I saw the hit, but I think it just hit him wrong. Like, yeah. It just didn't look that bad. And then
it didn't
all of
look
a sudden
that
menacing,
but sometimes those are the scary ones.
Those
right?
are the scary ones. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just to sort of relate it to like Dale Earnhardt's accident 20 years ago, when he went into the wall, it looked like a standard go into the wall at Daytona kind of accident. But the way he went into the wall when they did the analysis, it was the way he went in caused the whiplash that caused the neck injury, the fatal neck injury. In this situation, you're right. It's things where it wasn't, you know, an explosive collision. It was hitting your head on the turf, but it could have done it just right enough to cause the issue that he had last night. And I guess as of this morning, there hasn't really been any other update on him. I tried to find any, but it didn't seem like anybody at like 2 a.m. was updating his
current
situation.
Yeah, the last thing
situation.
I saw that he was in stable condition.
Stable condition, like basically at the medical center.
Checking for, you know, obviously he had a concussion, but other head injuries.
It's even with the helmet, when that head bounces and it kind of puts strain on your neck, it's just, you know, it's
inches, man. That's all it is. That's all it is. But it was really disturbing last night. I know that we've done a lot better in this league when it comes to these kind of injuries, these head injuries. And the league, for all of its criticisms that we've had about how it dealt with concussion in the past, how it ignored a lot of concussions, those are all valid. I mean, those are all valid. But the last couple of years, I mean, even probably decade plus, they have really, really done a good job of concussion protocols. They've done a very good job of, you know, keeping players, you know, alert, how you read things on the field, et cetera, helmet technology, all those things. They've tried to tweak the rules as best you possibly can, but it's humans are humans, and they're going to lead with the helmet sometimes, and you're going to catch a stinger or two, right? There's nothing you can do about those things. But you can try to get everybody more educated, a lot more training personnel educated, protocols in place when concussions do occur. And in situations like that, unfortunately, where there's an injury, it's a head injury, it's a neck injury, taken off the field to a hospital, those things are still going to happen in a very, very violent sport. But we really hope, you know, for the best, and we hope that it's minimal. It's just scary. It's scary. And the league gets it every now and, you know, gets one of these every now and then, but you just hope that eventually it, you know, he's healthy. The football, that's one of those injuries where the football aspect of it goes out the window, right? Like when we see a guy, limp off the field, needing help off the field, you know, because he got a leg injury, we as fans, or at least as football fans, we think, well, when will, you know, what is this injury? When will he come back, right? Like, you know, Derrick Henry, for example, gets hurt. Oh, is he going to come back in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, the whole year? Like, what's his status? Fantasy, fandom, all of that comes into play. That injury last night was, gee, I hope he'll be able to, like, walk. I hope he'll be able to regain his motor functions. Like forget his playing career. You hope he gets, his normalcy back, if you will, without any serious damage. So that was pretty sad last night. That was was that the fourth down play where he went for the ball and barely got it on the initial drive? Was that fourth down? I can't quite remember. I think it was.
I think it was. Yeah.
I think it was. So that where they were near the goal line and then the Chiefs went downfield.
Yeah. That
was the opening drive.
Where, you know, they had four chances inside the five, couldn't punch it in. I was like, oh, this is going to be a long night.
Oh, I know, right? Especially come away with nothing.
And then you had that happen at the end of it. I was like, oh, God. Because, I mean, a play right before that, Mike Williams went out.
Yeah.
I mean, right. Thankfully, he came back in, but he was rushed off. I'm like, oh, these guys, you know, it's like two consecutive plays. These guys are dropping like flies. This ain't good.
Yeah, right. But, again, as we said earlier, last night, this was a game where I really enjoyed it. I thought this was a fun divisional battle. I really did. I got to tell you, we talk about this a lot with quarterbacks when you really need a quarterback in this league, because the Chargers are set for a while. That kid can play, and he's going to be able to play for a very, you know, long time if he stays healthy. He's very good. He's very good. He's going to get better. He's going to continue to grow in that position. When he gains experience, he's going to learn a few ways to get the ball out of his hands, etc. Mahomes really struggled early in this game. There were times where the Chiefs offense couldn't move, but like I said earlier, when they needed him the most, he came through. He had that one pass that went right into the turf. He had him wide open. Hardman was wide open for a touchdown. He had him wide open in that corner and then saw it, and it was like he just threw the ball into the ground. And I remember yelling, "What is that?" My wife goes, "What?" I go, "Nothing. It's football. Just, nothing. Don't, you know."
I don't know about you. I mean, I was happy about it. I thought it was a fantastic play.
Yeah, enjoy that, because you don't see that very often, right?
But there were a lot. I mean, it just wasn't that. I mean, that was probably the biggest one. But there were a lot of miscues by Mahomes last night.
Yeah, there really was.
He was having a lot of issues early on. And, you know, it, for whatever reason, it felt like it was keeping the Chargers' momentum alive until Mahomes decided to Mahomes, and, well, the rest was history.
All right, so the Chargers go to 8-6, and the Chiefs now 10-4. Coming up, more of the fallout from the Urban Meyer firing and a couple of more names popping up for the Jacksonville Jaguars job. And Trevor Lawrence speaks out about it all. We'll have that for you next on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the
SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Ron's final day before he goes off for the Christmas holiday next week. Have a lot of fun. Enjoy your time away. Enjoy the holiday festivities.
Yeah, I'm going to try.
I will be here next week for 3 days before I take off for the 23rd and 24th. We'll have Sean filling in for you. Trevor Lawrence speaking yesterday. Boy, Trevor Lawrence must be the happiest guy in that room, huh?
He's
in that Jacksonville
be.
Team. He's got to be thrilled. Saying that the team now has, you know, has some focus. He says he really likes the fact that Darrell Bevell is the interim head coach. Says he's even keel. Always the same person. Never gets too high or low. Who do you think he's talking about there? That's something I respect. And then I can level with. I say that's the biggest thing we need right now. Someone that's consistent and just moving forward and pushing past it. Boy, I'll tell you right now, the media couldn't wait to devour Urban Meyer up and spit him out yesterday. And rightfully so. Like we were talking about in chronologically talking every little mistake that he made along the way. But man, I went from yesterday's show saying it could be a very short turnover for Urban Meyer to get back in the college game to thinking he really needs a good amount of time away from football. That's how quickly I went from that based on how many people were coming out guns a-blazing at Urban Meyer's personality and his character. I mean, they were tearing him down.
I mean, he's the most hated man in the NFL. I mean,
he really is.
He surpassed Roger Goodell.
Oh, my God. Every columnist out there was pen in hand ready to go right after. And rightfully so. Again, listen, this guy's a bad dude. I felt like he was a bad dude when he was at Florida, and I felt like it was at Ohio State. I respect his coaching. I respect his ability to recruit and bring in top-level players at the collegiate game and then turning those players into exceptional football teams that win national championships. He's won 3, for crying out loud. You know, that's a lot in a Saban era, for example. That's a lot. But at the same time, I never liked his personality. I never liked his character. And, I mean, Urban Meyer seemed perfectly fit for who I thought he was. But I always thought that there would be, like, he could just simply go, the NFL didn't work out for me. I'm going back to college, and there would be an AD waiting. And now I think ADs really will have to stop and pause as to whether or not this is really a guy they want to bring in. He's going to have to chill out a little bit, I think. I think that right now he is way, way, way too hot for your school to be bringing in. It isn't just being – he was not fired because he has a bad record. He was not fired for that. He was fired because he has made too many mistakes and has a personality that the team couldn't live with anymore. I'm a winner, you're a loser, right? Kicking Josh Lambeau, getting in arguments with star players, right? Even yesterday's criticisms of him, even bringing in Tebow, which in the end, think about this for a second. He brought in Tim Tebow, but he cut Tim Tebow pretty much immediately, right? Like within one preseason game. So he didn't hang on to Tebow. He didn't try to make something out of nothing. He gave him an opportunity. And as soon as he realized, oh, this kid can't play anymore, bye, see you later, I cut you. So that was really inconsequential. I mean, it really wasn't, but yet it was, oh, but he took an opportunity away. He insulted every person in the NFL, whoever tried to make a roster. Like, everything he did now is out there, and it is worse than when we initially had it. And it just is too much. It's piled on too much that if I'm an AD, I'm a school president, he can't come anywhere near my program right now. There's plenty of young, good coaching candidates out there. I don't need to drag this guy to my school and make apologies for him and all of that. I can bring in a good young assistant. There are plenty of them out there that are ready to take up the reins of your program and take it to the next level. You do not need this disaster right now. He can chill out for a little bit and come back,
But I went from believing that he could make a quick turnaround back to college to thinking he probably needs about a year or two off to go cool off for a second. Because, again,
Maybe longer.
I knew the national media didn't like him. I mean, I knew that. They had pen in hand, man. They were ready to go. These columns were like pre-written. They were just, I can't wait to send this to the editor when the day happens. Boom. Here he goes. Urban Meyer fired. So Byron Leftwich, we mentioned it yesterday about possibly getting that job. Is that gained a lot of momentum yesterday, too? Eric Bieniemy gained a lot of momentum as possible. I think if you are Shad Khan, I'm glad we're getting Frank Schwab coming on in hour number three, because Frank had a very interesting tweet that I want to talk to him about. And he talked about how when you have these owners that either inherited money or, you know, they earned it through something else, obviously, right? None of them bought an NFL team broke and became rich, right? Like, if you look at some of the families, Hunts, the Maras, the Rooneys, maybe you can make that case. They had some money, but then they became uber wealthy because the value of the franchise that they bought decades and decades ago has made them rich. But for a lot of owners, especially new owners, they made their money doing something else, right? Jerry Jones and oil, Shad Khan and something, whatever it was. They don't really know this business. They just own it. And because the business is so public, they're making decisions on a business they don't really know anything about. Shad Khan got caught up in a couple of things with the Urban Meyer hire. One, Urban was a pretty hot name. Two, he had name recognition in Florida, and that might kick up interest for a franchise that went 1-15. Two, maybe he felt it, maybe somebody told him that when you have Trevor Lawrence, you want to develop Trevor Lawrence, and who better to develop him than a guy like Urban Meyer, right? Just seemed logical, and it didn't work out that way. And I was talking about this a little bit yesterday. When I worked in minor league basketball, there were two schools of thought as to how to run your basketball team, especially at the minor league level, where tickets are $10. You know, you're trying to get people in the gate. You're trying to get them excited about your product. One, put together a product that is really good. Doesn't matter where the players are from in terms of where they went to college or wherever. They're maybe not locals or whatever. Put the best team you possibly can. Make them good. People will come. They'll see how good the local team is, and maybe they'll buy more tickets and sponsorships and all the things that you want to survive. The second school of thought, and I was 2-for-2 on this with the two teams I worked for, was ditch all of that. Bring in people know. Former college stars, a coach that people recognize, even if he's not a very good coach. It doesn't matter. Whatever it takes. Get people fired up locally, locally, locally. In Las Vegas, we brought in former UNLV players, right? We couldn't find them fast enough. If they had ability to play basketball, we put them on the team, right? Same when I was with the Tampa Bay Thunderdogs. Find Florida Gators. Find Florida State Seminoles that didn't make the NBA, they're looking to play professional basketball on a minor league level. The NFL, you don't do that. You do not have to do that. You do not have to go get the local guy, because the local guy will you get interest in your team by winning. You don't have to hire an Urban Meyer because he's got name recognition and people might buy tickets. You don't have to put a Tim Tebow on the roster because he'll sell jerseys and buy tickets. Like, winning takes care of everything. Right? It'll take care of everything. And I think Shad Khan bought into the sort of double narrative about Urban Meyer. He's local, like in terms of he coached at Florida and he won two championships. And he's still kind of a popular name, even though he left Florida kind of on, you know, iffy terms with health concerns going to Ohio State. He gave Florida two national titles and a Heisman Trophy winner in Tim Tebow. And the fact that Urban was a very good coach and might be good to make the transition. But I got one question coming out of this, and this is a legit question. Right now in the NFL, there are two coaches that sort of embody the college coach to the NFL route. You have Matt Rhule at Carolina, and he's not working out very well. Fired Joe Brady, and that's usually a sign the pressure's coming on you very soon. You make a change at the coaching staff because the axe is probably going to fall on you pretty soon. But the other is Cliff Kingsbury. Now, Cliff Kingsbury's situation is really unique because Matt Rhule was successful at college and he made the transition to pro, but Cliff Kingsbury was fired at Texas Tech. He was out of a job when they hired him at Arizona. And he replaced Steve Wilks. Remember Steve Wilks? He was there for what, 2 seconds as the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals? I think 1 year?
Yeah.
He was there for a cup of coffee. And they brought him in to Cliff Kingsbury, and it was in the same boat. It was, you know what? I don't know if this is going to work. This guy was fired. All of those things. It has worked. Arizona is one of the top teams in the NFL. If you are an owner and you are looking at, for a new head coach, are you likely to try this again given the Urban Meyer burnout? Are you willing to look around college football and find a guy like, oh, I don't even want to speculate who could pop up. But let's say there's a name out there that you could feel like, oh, he could go to the pros. Like, he could be an NFL coach. He's the next. Actually, Lincoln Riley was on that list. But now that he's at USC, he's off that list. What would you do if you were an owner? Would you go down this road, or would you say, you know what is working? Brandon Staley with the Chargers. Sean McVay with the Rams. Matt LaFleur in Green Bay. Right? Like, coordinators, young guys. You can make the case for Zach Taylor at Cincinnati. Guys who have paid their dues in this league, who know this league and know how it goes, how it works, the scheduling, the hours, the preparation, the expectations, how off seasons work, the rules, what players can and can't do. That's the guy I want to bring in. Because I'll bring in a coaching guy, and he's on an education curve, and I don't really want to deal with that because it may not work out. It's an interesting concept to sort of put together. All right, talk about this. We'll come up. We'll talk a little bit more before we close out this hour. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up in hour number two. Then we'll talk Buffalo Bills. They are 7-6, going in the wrong direction as we continue. It is Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along, and I hope you have a great holiday week next week. Michael in Atlanta on Twitter saying goodbye to us. He's going to be gone for 3 weeks. We won't be seeing his tweets for a while. Well, you Brazil? Won't. For he says he's going to Portland, Vancouver, Seattle. Hey, San Fran, you know Napa, what? San... What a trip.
You can carry the show with you, Michael.
Living the life, man. Anyway, Ron's going to be out all next week because of the holidays. But I will persevere. I will set you up for the bowl season. By the way, bowls kick off today, Ron.
Yes, they
do. Kicking off today, noon. MTSU and Toledo, baby. The Bahama Bowls in Nassau. What kind of workouts must that been for both?
There
teams?
Aren't any.
Zero?
Zero.
Maybe, guys, maybe practice is at 2.
You know what I think? If I'm the coach, I'm showing him the scene from Rocky 3 and saying we're having a running contest on the beach.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Exactly. Both of these teams slogged their way to a 6-6 season and got rewarded by going to the Bahamas. How do they determine who goes to the Bahamas? Do they just take all the crappy 6-6 teams and draw their names out of a hat? I don't even know if that bowl game is tied into anything. Like, is it like Conference USA and the MAC? I think it's just, and the winner is Middle Tennessee State. Come on over. My God, what a trip. Other people are going all these places around the country that's cold, windy. These northern bowl games that don't offer you sunshine or beach. And these two 6-6 teams get to play in the Bahamas. That's great. God bless them. Coastal Carolina and I think Northern Illinois going on today as well. Those are the two bowl games that are happening. And it's like I've been saying all week, get ready, folks, because it's coming. Pouring in all your bowl games. Yeah, it's the Tail Greeter Cure Bowl. That's Northern Illinois against Coastal Carolina. Coastal Carolina should be kind of mad. They went 10-2. They should be like, why can't we go to the Bahamas? I know they're in Myrtle Beach. I get it, but still, it's Bahamas. Remember you were mentioning all the gift goodies, the gift bags
Yes.
that you get on these bowl games? I wonder what the Bahama Bowl's giving out.
Shorts.
shorts, a shirt, a Bahama shirt?
Maybe.
That would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
With the bowl on it?
Well, I guess I was thinking Bermuda. Bermuda shorts Bermuda would make shorts, more sense.
Yeah, that would make more sense. Bahama shirt. How about coconuts? I don't know. Seashells. That'd be good. Middle Tennessee State and Toledo. That'll get you going today. If there's one game I'm watching on Saturday, Jackson State against South Carolina State. I haven't seen Jackson State play. I haven't seen a game that they've played.
Neither have I.
They're not on TV, but I want to see Deion coach. Like, I want to see Deion coach. I don't want to see primetime because I'm getting that all the time. I get that all the time. These Affleck ads he's doing with Nick Saban, it's all about primetime. Here. But I want to see Deion Sanders coach.
Real quick, you want to know what the Bahama Bowls are giving out?
Yeah, what is that?
Board shorts.
Yeah.
Ice shaker bottle.
Oh.
Beach towel, string backpack, lapel pin, additional item to be determined.
All right, so it's not a PlayStation 5.
No.
But you get to go to the Bahamas. Where are they putting them up? I mean, that's what I'd like to know.
Now, you spoke of Jackson State. You want to know what they're getting?
Yeah, what is
for
Jackson State
for the Cricket
getting?
Celebration Bowl against South Carolina State? Gift suite, which I guess is, you just walk into a room. That's
pick out some prizes, yeah.
A backpack, a beanie, rechargeable battery pack, gift certificate for mom, and a journal.
No.
Yeah.
Not fantastic. You could have done better Cricket Celebration
PlayStation
Bowl.
Fiesta Bowl. That's the one you want to go to.
They're getting the hardest thing to find, and they're giving them away at bowl games.